The GI Research Foundation was able to produce this podcast with a generous sponsorship from Metro Infusion Centers.
See the strides we're making and hold on to hope that this is going to continue, the future is bright, and that things are going to continue to improve for you and your family members.
Hello. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Visceral, a podcast of the GI Research Foundation. My name is Anna Gomberg. Today, I'm talking with Noah Kruglia Cleveland, Assistant Professor of Medicine and Director of the Intestinal Ultrasound Program, and Amelia Keller, Assistant Professor of Pediatrics and Director of Pediatric Intestinal Ultrasound, both here at the University of Chicago Medicine Inflammatory Bowel Disease Center. Today is all about a tried and true technology that has become one of the newest diagnostic tools used by gastroenterologists for their patients here in the United States, intestinal ultrasound, and how using ultrasound to see your GI tract in real time is helping doctors monitor Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, both at diagnosis and over time. So welcome, thank you, and let's get started.
This is such a new topic for us. Dr. Kruglia Cleveland, can you tell us, what is intestinal ultrasound?
Well, first, thank you for having us. It's lovely to be here and to share intestinal ultrasound with patients and hopefully other colleagues as well who will listen to this. Intestinal ultrasound is an ultrasound exam very similar to what is offered for patients who are pregnant or undergo ultrasound for assessment of the liver, any abdominal organs. The unique part of this is that it's offered here for inflammatory bowel disease, and it's done during the clinic visit by your provider. So you can get real-time assessment of your disease activity and whether you have inflammation in the bowel while you see your doctor, and you can make decisions based on that. And in addition, not only your doctor gets to see if your disease is active or not, you get to see it too.
That is amazing. I have seen and heard from patients that this is really really changes the game for them in understanding what their disease looks like inside their body and how they think about health maintenance and think about the management of their Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. Dr. Keller, I'm very interested to hear from you. What is it like with little kids or teenagers or their parents, maybe most importantly?
I think one of the most incredible things about ultrasound is that it is very visual. So I think many times in our IBD visits, we talk about a lot of different things, but I think there's so much value in not only the parents and caregivers being able to actually see, you know, in the case that there's active inflammation, to be actually able to see that on the screen or to see remission. And I also think it's so valuable for the kids as well. And I think it's a different experience depending on the age of the child. When they're a little bit younger, it's honestly more like a fun game to be pointing out different things. But I think it really does bring so much to patient care and a deeper understanding of disease and disease management.
That's awesome. So we already have some evidence that both in adults and in pediatric population, patients understand their disease better, where their symptoms are coming from, and are able to participate in a shared decision-making with their provider when they have intestinal ultrasound done.
And how often do you perform intestinal ultrasound? When do you do it?
So typically, it should be done at every visit. If your provider knows how to perform intestinal ultrasound, you can have it done at times of diagnosis, so you can get a baseline assessment of where is your disease, how active it is, and we quantify the degree of inflammation, the locations, and that gives us a benchmark to then compare how you're doing after you start a new drug or new therapy. The other times to do this is when you've been on therapy and we want to ensure that you're in what we call deep remission, or that your bowel is healed sufficiently to prevent relapse. And so we assess for what we call transmural healing, or just deeper levels of healing, and ensure that you're in remission. And then in other scenarios where people are in remission, we just assess to ensure that you're still there, because we know that patients' symptoms don't always reflect disease activity. And so sometimes we can catch relapse as early as 3 months before patients feel their symptoms. And if we assess objectively how patients do, typically we recommend every 3 to 6 months to have something objective, we can catch patients before they actually feel the symptoms of relapse and we can act earlier.
Yeah. Can you speak a little bit more about the difference between deep remission and having clinical symptoms? You've kind of, there's several different stratifications that you've talked about there. What are those distinctions?
Yes. So there are two parts to treatment in inflammatory bowel disease. One is an induction period where patients who come who are symptomatic and have active inflammation get therapy to get them into a point where they feel well and there is no inflammation. And then there is a second part, which is called maintenance, and that is ensuring you remain well and prevention of relapse, of prevention of you feeling unwell. And so we can assess with intestinal ultrasound whether we're successfully inducing you into remission or resolving the inflammation. And then in the maintenance period, we can ensure that you're remaining in remission and there is no reactivation of your disease, as this unfortunately still happens unpredictably in IBD.
Interesting. Dr. Keller, do you have anything to add?
I was just going to say too, I think sometimes we use different terms to describe remission. Like, what does remission mean? And to Dr. Cleveland's point, you know, one of the first things that we hope for is clinical remission. And what that means is that you're not having any symptoms. But as she mentioned, sometimes you have no symptoms, but you might still have active disease. So there's other things we look for. So one of the other things we can talk about is biomarker remission. And often to us, that means when we check your blood work or we make you do a stool sample, are we seeing that those values are normal? And that would be biomarker remission. And then we also say endoscopic remission. So that would mean if we were doing an endoscopy and then on endoscopy, we're not seeing any evidence of active inflammation. We go a level deeper and we say under histology. So when we take those biopsies and we look under the microscope, do you have remission there as well? And then there's this term that has really emerged with imaging and intestinal ultrasound, which is transmural remission or healing. And that's because with intestinal ultrasound, we can actually see all the different layers of the bowel wall, and we can see things outside of the bowel wall that maybe hints that you've got inflammation as well. And so when we're not seeing any of that on imaging, we can say transmural sort of remission or transmural healing. So there's many different terms that we use.
That's great. That's a really, thank you. That's a really helpful primer for understanding all of those distinctions, which can be very overwhelming from a patient perspective.
I think, and if I can add, I think there's something important for patients to understand. And the key here is that, again, when the way patients feel doesn't always reflect the disease state. And at times you may have symptoms that may be related to other things, maybe some food intolerance and you actually don't have active disease. And here intestinal ultrasound can reassure you that there is actually no active inflammation. And there's maybe something else in play. And there are times where patients may have no symptoms, but have a lot of active inflammation. And it's either a matter of time before you feel symptomatic or a matter of time before there's a complication. And again, this is where intestinal ultrasound periodically helps us in ensuring that we optimize how patients do over time. So with all these terminologies of remission, the key, I think, is to distinguish between how you feel and what objectively is occurring, whether we test it via stool, blood or ultrasound. These don't always correlate, and the objective assessment is key here to ensure you feel as best as you can and as long as possible.
That is such an important distinction. And we talk about this in our patient support group every single month. Every single month we talk about the distinction between really discovering for patients or thinking about for patients, is this a flare? People with diagnosed IBD, is this a flare or is this something I ate? Or is this a norovirus that my kid gave me? Is an ongoing part of their symptom management and understanding what they're supposed to do with those symptoms. And I think that that's such, it is so interesting that there's now a tool that is not quite as elaborate as a colonoscopy that we can use to help answer some of those questions. I think that's wonderful. Speaking of colonoscopies, how does this diagnostic tool relate to current standard of care practices, including colonoscopy for screening Can I just get intestinal ultrasound and skip my colonoscopies? Dr. Keller's laughing. What do you think?
Well, I was going to say probably it's a little bit different if you're dealing with pediatric patients versus adult patients. So I usually talk to my patients about intestinal ultrasound and colonoscopy or upper endoscopy are each valuable in their own right, in that they do kind of show us and tell us different things. So in pediatric patients, we do need colonoscopies for diagnosis to actually get those biopsies and tissue samples for diagnosis. And then really, in terms of once they're already diagnosed, we can use more intestinal ultrasound to monitor their response to therapy versus before we had this, we would repeat their colonoscopy to get biopsies again and to actually see under endoscopy, is there evidence of healing? So certainly intestinal ultrasound for our pediatric patients can replace those colonoscopies we were doing just to see if there was a response to therapy. But then it is still quite important if you are of the age where you're going to need colon cancer screening because you still are going to need those biopsies, which we can't take biopsies with intestinal ultrasound. So that's where things differ a little bit.
Yeah, that would be really science fiction.
Yeah.
Somehow do that maybe in the next 100 years. I don't know. That's pretty, that would be quite a feat.
Metro Infectious Disease Consultants, the parent company of Metro Infusion Centers, is proud to announce their 30th anniversary gala celebration on October 26th in downtown Chicago. With 110 physicians and over 220 infusion centers nationwide, we are committed to making life-saving therapies available in a comfortable and cost-effective environment while continuing to support the future generations of infectious disease physicians. Please visit us at www.midcgala.com to learn how you can participate. Again, that is www.midcgala.com.
What is it like to get an intestinal ultrasound? What is it like for a patient when they come into the room, when they come to that clinic appointment?
Unlike other procedures, this doesn't have to start at home. They don't have to prep. The patients don't have to take any laxatives. And so I actually encourage my patients to eat and drink. I like when the intestine is full and the small intestine is stimulated to move. It helps me differentiate the colon from the small bowel and identify it if you've had surgery, the connection site. So that's the beauty of it. And if someone tells you not to eat or drink, they probably are just not familiar with how to prepare for an exam by Dr. Keller and I at University of Chicago. There might be other sonographers who might be different than us, or scenarios are different. But for the most part, intestinal ultrasound requires no preparation. And then when you arrive, if it's done during your clinic visit, you'll typically, it'll be done in the regular room as part of the continuation of your abdominal exam. We dim the lights, you will lay on your back. We typically will have you lift your shirt to your kind of chest and lower the waistband of your pants so we can see those hip bones. And we will drape your pants or clothing to protect them from the gel. Now we have gel warmers. So typically at University of Chicago, the gel will be warm and this experience is pretty friendly. So in a kind of dim room, you will be able to see the screen as we scan and we'll be able to teach you and look together at the bowel as we scan it. It's just essentially putting gel on the abdomen and then putting a wand on the abdominal wall and scanning up and down to visualize all the parts of the intestine.
One of the amazing things about the University of Chicago program that I didn't know about until I got here was they actually have a projector as well that is connected to the ultrasound machine. And this will project images of your intestines onto the wall so you can actually watch live what's happening. And I think, I mean, I'm biased because I see a lot of pediatric patients, but we just got a projector to set up to kind of mirror that. And it makes it so much more fun and exciting to watch that. And I think that just really enhances the patient care. It's an amazing feature. And none of the other centers I have been at have that feature. So
that is really cool. It's like a old fashioned film strip or something where it's a movie. That's really neat. So I understand you can use ultrasound to see all of the large and small intestine from the top to the bottom. What value do you have? Is that for you as a clinician? And what value is it for the patient?
I think one of the things that I really like about it is that often when we're trying to get a sense of if treatment is successful, we're doing blood work or we're doing different testing, and then we have to wait for the results and then we're discussing them later. And I think one of the values, both for me as a clinician and for the patient, is we're actually able to see things in real time at the bedside and able to have those discussions at that time. So it facilitates faster decision making and earlier intervention. And I think that benefits both the patient and myself. And it also really involves the patient in their care versus me just reviewing the results on my own and then making a decision and then bringing it to the patient to speak to them or bringing it to the caregiver to speak to them as well. I think it really expedites things and really involves them in their care.
That's awesome. What about the parents? How do the parents feel about it?
I think, not surprisingly, parents love it because I think, too, it's really challenging when your child has a chronic disease and you're trying to explain that to them, and you're both, it almost medicalizes the parent as well, in that they have to explain a lot of this to the child. But if the child is able to understand and able to be engaged in their care, I think it offers a different avenue. And it takes a little bit of that away from the parent too, because we have another means of explaining it to them in a way that's easier for them to understand.
That's wonderful. Dr. Krugliak-Cleveland, do you have anything to add?
I would add that for both adults and parents, although I'm an adult gastroenterologist, I see parents and some significant others with their patients all the time. It really is overwhelming. And I have seen such incredible reactions. One from patients who would say, goodness, I've been feeling this pain in this area all this time, and now to actually put a picture to it and be able to see what it is causing me this issue, particularly in cases of strictures, when they see the stricture and how long it is and what that looks like. It's just empowering and informative for family members who at times are really reluctant, or patients themselves are reluctant to follow recommendations, sometimes are challenging, like jumping from an oral therapy to a biologic therapy that might require infusions or injectables. Oftentimes, intestinal ultrasound is what really helps patients make that jump, because they see and can quantify what it is that we're talking about. You know, we've seen anywhere from patients like just breaking into tears. We have patients who fly multiple times from far away for such basic technology that is just unfortunate right now that it's not widely available, but because it is such a informative, easy to do, well-tolerated exam, patients will go through great lengths to come and get this done.
Well, we are doing our darndest to make it more widely available, are we not? Dr. Krugliak-Cleveland, could you tell us a little bit about how this technology has come to the United States, where it came from, how it is being rolled out, and what people who maybe are not in the local Chicago region can expect in the next few years?
Yes. So ultrasound in general is an old technology, and intestinal ultrasound in particular has been around for several decades in Europe primarily, but actually a few decades ago, it was here in the US, but slowly, medicine in the United States kind of abandoned ultrasound in some ways, and many of the physicians have not gone through enough training to integrate it into practice. And in the last several years, actually, the American Medical Association has been trying to push and encourage the use of POCUS, point of care ultrasound, in numerous fields, including emergency medicine, and it's now integrated in rheumatology, and thankfully now inflammatory bowel disease. But in Europe, it's been routinely taught during medical school residency and gastroenterology fellowship. And so when a patient comes in with abdominal pain to the ER, they often will get an abdominal ultrasound to assess for inflammation in the intestines and other organs. In the US, that's not been the case. And it's really around 2019 where the first gastroenterologists and IBD experts have started getting trained. Amelia and I were one of the first handful of people who were trained. And initially, this was happening kind of asynchronously, and we weren't really aware of one another. But shortly thereafter, around 2021, when we at University of Chicago started integrating into practice, we received a grant from the Helmsley Charitable Trust. And that grant allowed the University of Chicago, in collaboration with the University of Calgary and Mount Sinai in New York, to bring the education to the United States. And that has helped in spreading intestinal ultrasound nationwide and actually throughout North America. So that has been one of the hurdles, including also not having really anyone to kind of champion this. But once those main centers got to train a number of clinicians and advocate for this, it allowed other key opinion leaders to kind of come in and start seeing the value of it. And this has been a complete game changer for our practice. And anyone who's been exposed to it immediately kind of jumped in and wanted to learn and bring this to their centers. And so over the last 3 years or so, there have been over 100 IBD experts now that have been trained. And the curriculum is made of three parts. And part of the curriculum is a course that our grant allowed and essentially paid for. But the second part is that you need to spend time, one-on-one time with an expert. And there are very few centers in the US that offer this. And here at University of Chicago, we're one of the top three centers who train most IBD clinicians intestinal ultrasound worldwide. So we have been not only a big part of getting the funds to bring the first course to the United States, but also are working very hard between Dr. Keller and I, training people in the United States and outside of the United States, the second part of this curriculum.
Yes, working extremely hard to try to make this a more accessible technology and treatment option for people everywhere, which I think, and I will say, has so far been quite successful in seeing the legions of gastroenterologists who have been already trained through this grant. So thank you so much for doing that. Could both of you speak a little bit to research applications and what you might be able to use this technology for in your work going forward?
Yeah, so one of the things that's been a big priority for us as pediatric gastroenterologists is as ultrasound has really become more mainstream, we have traditionally used some of the parameters that the adult clinicians have used to measure inflammation in children. But what the few of us who actually do pediatric ultrasound have noticed is a lot of these parameters may be different in children. And so I work with the pediatric committee for intestinal ultrasound, and we have been studying what those parameters might be for children. And so we found that they are actually a little bit different. So we are hoping to publish that research to show that we need some different standardized values for children. And some of the other research we're doing is actually looking at monitoring response to different IBD therapies using intestinal ultrasound. And because it's not invasive, it doesn't require any preparation, we can do it frequently, we can actually monitor response to therapy much earlier than we might have been able to with things like endoscopy. So we can even check, you know, some of the newer medications can work as quickly as 24 to 48 hours. And we can actually use ultrasound to look at those changes really early on, where traditionally we would not use something like an endoscopy in 24 hours. So ultrasound has been really key for those types of studies.
That's amazing. Dr. Krugliak-Cleveland, how about you?
There has been a lot of progress in the field of intestinal ultrasound IBD in terms of research. And that is really key for the future of that field within IBD. I think that some really important work has shown that intestinal ultrasound is highly correlative to what we see endoscopically. We have to remember that endoscopy is still the gold standard in both diagnosis and monitoring inflammatory bowel disease. And so as long as we are able to demonstrate that intestinal ultrasound is at least as accurate, it would be utilized by more providers. And thankfully, some people more senior in the field were able to show this, and that really helped when we talked to clinicians about the utility of this tool to show that it's accurate and that it's reliable. And so that has been really an important part of researching that in the field. And of course, there is so much more to do. There are a lot of publications constantly coming out showing not only that it is equivalent to endoscopy, but it's actually showing now some superiority to what we can consider gold standard.
Wow. So
some of the newer research that's come out has shown that patients who heal their bowel to levels that is completely normalized, the parameters in ultrasound do better than if you only try to normalize findings on endoscopy. On endoscopy, we imagine you're inside a tunnel, you only see the superficial levels of the bowel. It's called a mucosa. On ultrasound, you can see all layers of the bowel. And when you see that you healed all the layers of the bowel, but not just the superficial layer, we're seeing, at least in Crohn's, that patients will have less relapse, will need surgery less often, will need less corticosteroids and escalation of therapy. And so we're now starting to show data that monitoring with intestinal ultrasound and reaching deeper levels of healing may be even superior to what we consider gold standard.
This has been amazing. I'm so grateful to both of you for sharing your time and expertise. And I can't believe how lucky we are to be here at the University of Chicago leading this at the forefront. Dr. Keller and Dr. Kruglia Cleveland, what if you could tell patients one thing, or their parents, one thing about intestinal ultrasound that they should carry with them? What one thing would you tell patients that they should know? Dr. Keller?
So now that you know that intestinal ultrasound exists and is an option, ask for it, because the more that we talk about it and the more that we ask for it, the more that we can really advocate to make this available in more centers and get more people trained.
Awesome.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And I think that the important message for patients is not only now that you know of intestinal ultrasound, please ask for it, have it done, try it. You might find that it will change your life. The other important point here is that you see that our field is constantly evolving. And when you experience intestinal ultrasound, you'll see what a difference this makes in your experience of IBD and monitoring of your disease. And remember that with the development of the field, that there's hope that your future will look differently, and maybe even one day we'll get to a cure. So see the strides we're making and hold on to hope that this is going to continue. The future is bright and that things are going to continue to improve for you and your family members.
If a clinician wanted to learn about how to do intestinal ultrasound, what would they need to do? Dr. Kruglia Cleveland?
So there's currently a curriculum that is have been built and offered through the International Bowel Ultrasound Group that is based in Europe. In short, they're called IBIS. And in order to get trained, currently you can go on their website. It's ibis-group.org. And you can see the three parts of the curriculum. They're called Module 1, 2, and 3. Currently, Module 1 is offered throughout the world periodically, about at least quarterly. And now has also been offered in the United States in the last 3 years. And the next one will be offered in March of 2025 in Houston. To apply, you'll have to become a member of IBIS, and you'll have to be in good standing, and you need to have or identified an ultrasound machine in order to qualify. And so once you perform or take part in the first course, which is a 2 to 3 day course, the second part will be to spend 4 weeks with an expert clinician. Oftentimes it's split into 2 week times at two different centers, and University of Chicago is one of those centers. There are three other centers in the United States that you can go and spend time with an expert clinician who will do one-on-one teaching with you. And then the third part is right now a didactic, which is offered at the European Crohn's and Colitis Organization annual scientific meeting. And now for the first time through the same grant that I've mentioned that we received from Helmsley Charitable Trust, we're offering it now at DEW, and that's called Module 3. It's a didactic that you take in the test. While I state that, we're through the grant I received from Helmsley, we also established the Intestinal Ultrasound Group for the United States and Canada. It's called IUSCAN. And IUSCAN is working closely with IBIS, the International Bowel Ultrasound Group, to make education and these courses more readily available in the U.S. as the desire to train by clinicians is increasing and the demand is high. So we're hoping by 2025 to have the courses offered through IBIS in collaboration with IUScan in the United States more frequently. And so you can directly reach out to IUScan or IBIS to get more information.
Awesome. Thank you. That's so great.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast Visceral from the GI Research Foundation. This episode was written, edited, and produced by me, Anna Gomberg, and edited and mixed by Luke Pahalski. Special thanks to the talented Michael Collins Dowden, who composed our theme music, and executive producer Allison Thielen. We hope you will join us next time, and until then, to access other podcasts and learn more about research to treat, prevent, and cure digestive diseases, please visit the website at giresearchfoundation.org. Please like and subscribe to Visceral on all your favorite podcast platforms, and until next time, listen to your gut. Thank you again to our sponsors, Metro Infusion Centers.